From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 High FM.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning, just before Shmini Atzeret Simchas Torah. Hope that you are having a great one out there. You're enjoying the fact that the jacarandas are starting to come out, and that all the beautiful rain we've been having. It is really, really lovely. Before I start on the official aspects of the show today, I do just want to reach out to say thank you to everyone who took so well to last week's interview about Sandringham High School with Frankie Coda. I've had a number of people reach out to me and say how much they enjoyed hearing what's happening at the school. So thank you for doing that and for listening. And hopefully in our community we can have some improvement, because that is, you know, it's always good to improve things. Of course, I have to do a show and we have to talk about stuff, and I struggled this week to come up with topics to talk about on the show, because there really just is one topic that everyone has been thinking about and engaging with and just trying to sort out in their minds and their prayers and in their thoughts, and that is the return of the hostages. So we're going to be spending a lot of time on that on the show today. And it's not unprecedented, but it is unusual when you have to do live radio in the middle of a breaking story. So I will be talking about the topics that I'm going to talk about, but as things come and get updated, I will be just, if things, you know, pitch up on the internet, then I will just update you as they are being updated. As I watch the Times of Israel live feed at the moment, I can see a plane landing in Israel, and I think that that's slightly delayed, but it's basically it's Trump's plane, and I can actually see it landing in Israel, which seems to have taken place about 10 minutes ago. So that is the latest, and it seems that Trump has been transported to Hostage Square whilst some of the freed hostages are arriving at the military base. So that is the latest as of 4 minutes ago, and we will keep you updated the entire time that this show is running. So two thoughts really occurred to me on this particular day. And the first one is the extent to which in the last 2 years we've really had to be very nimble, both about our organizing as a people and about our organizing and about our emotional abilities. Because 2 years ago on Shmini Atzeret Simchas Torah, the next week had been scheduled, I recalled, for the 50th celebration of the South African Zionist Federation, their 50th conference. It was their 125th year since the creation of the organization, and that obviously was a big deal. And at the time, the person who they had to come speak was Rabbi Leo D, who at the time represented, I guess, the sort of one of the worst things that had happened to someone in the Jewish world. If you recall, he was driving with his family, and his wife and a number of his kids were killed sort of simultaneously. And it was a big deal in the Jewish world. And he subsequently did come to South Africa, but basically the whole conference had to be scrapped within a week. And turned into a protest stroke solidarity event almost immediately, with different political parties and civil society and religious groups all coming out to support the Jewish community. But it really took a there was months and months of organizing that had to really be turned on a dime and changed in order to accommodate the craziness which we would all go through coming up for the next 2 years. And it occurred to me that once again, we're going to have to be doing a similar thing because, of course, Shmini Atzeret Simchas Torah was coming up and it was going to be 2 years since all the hostages had been taken. And likewise, the Zionist Federation had to put together an event for the commemoration of that emotional valence. So there's a hostage coming out. They're going to be doing, they're a musician, one of the hostages, and with the full orchestra, they were going to be doing a kind of candlelight vigil stroke concert for that. It's featuring former hostage Agam Berger and a 20-piece orchestra as well as guest vocalists. And that was supposed to be happening on Thursday, the 16th of October at 6:30 p.m. And it'll still happen. But if this hostage release carries on the way it's carrying on, then it is going to be a real change, I think, in emotional valence once again. And so we will have to accommodate what is happening with regards to that. I that was one of the things that occurred to me to say that maybe this will mark the less time that we have to deal with this particular switchblade of emotions, or whipsaw, as they like to call it. But I would certainly say that if you were going to attend that event, and if you haven't attended it, I would go and have a look. It's on the Zionist Fed's website. It's going to be a very moving address. But hopefully, in the process, we'll actually be able to commemorate something else more than just 2 years, maybe all the hostages getting out. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. And we're covering the story of the hostage release today, as I think everyone in the Jewish world is. And if you'd like to give us your perspective, we'd love to have it. 061-895-1019. That is the WhatsApp line. 061-895-1019. And we'll be very happy to take your viewpoints. As I watch Trump coming up onto the tarmac, I think that it's slightly delayed live, but I can see Jared and Kushner and Ivanka Trump. I can see the Mike Huckabee, the ambassador to Israel from America. There is Netanyahu and Sarah. There's a guy wearing masks, which I can only assume are security people for security reasons, not because they're worried about COVID. There's also President Herzog and what looks like his wife, from what I can tell. So that is who is awaiting the release of the hostages at the moment, or at the moment actually just waiting for Trump to get off the plane. So that is on that side of thing. And what I wanted to say about this is that I think, in my mind, that this might represent sort of, you know, the Israelis wanted two things out of this deal, and the Americans. They wanted, obviously, all the hostages to be released. And they wanted an end to Hamas as a threat in Gaza. And depending on how this goes today, we'll get the first part. And I suspect the first part will be gotten. It seems to be that if Trump pitches up in the Middle East, that everyone will do their part for the first part. And I think getting the hostages out obviously has been a core issue from the beginning. And more than that, I think it also provides an important respite for the Israeli body politic, because it is a festering inability to actually get anything else done in the society as long as these people are still being held. So I think it will give Israelis a chance to move on, grieve a bit, and sort of do what they need to do going forward without having this hanging over everyone, whether you're a hostage family, Netanyahu, the military, Mossad, whatever. And I think that that's very important. But it then question is, what actually happens next in terms of the second point, which is the disarmament of Hamas? And it does look like we may not get everything we want there, because Hamas is already starting to say that they will not disarm. There's clashes happening in the Strip as we speak between various clan groups and Hamas, who are fighting it out. A major Hamas propagandist nicknamed Mr. FAFO, unsurprisingly wearing a vest as a so-called journalist. He was killed this week in the last couple of days in clashes between Hamas and these other clans. And so that signals that Hamas is still not a military threat per se, but a sort of local civilian threat. They can still they have enough what would you call monopoly of violence, I guess, to actually drive the agenda. So the idea that they're going to disarm, I think, is unusual, but you know, you never know. I personally was surprised that they took the deal at all. I think when I was talking to you last week, I was kind of, I didn't think that them giving up the hostages would be a likely scenario, because it really makes their life much more difficult. But I think with Qatari and Turkish pressure via the administration, that seems to have come through. So now is going to be the next phase, but what you do. The good thing is that I think if you looked at some of the previous proposals that were being put on the table, that you had Israel withdrawing entirely from the Strip, including from the south where the smuggling was coming from, and also it would have put Hamas right back up against the kibbutzim that they had attacked earlier. So now at least the Israelis have some control over the Strip, more than half, and they have all the major boundaries covered themselves, which can stop the smuggling and can stop and will provide a military buffer between Hamas and any civilians. So that doesn't disarm Hamas, but it does give you a at least a buffer militarily in case they fire rockets or whatever. So that's where I think that you sort of get this one and a half type scenario. And it means that it's not a peace deal. It's just like a strengthened ceasefire deal, which will mean that in some ways the fighting may continue in ways that are maybe more low level, in the same way as you see Israel going into the West Bank from time to time to have to deal with terrorist groups or Iran or whatever. This might be once again what happens. But also it means that the offensive of diplomacy can start to take place. Effectively, Hamas is isolated in the world. It's why they made this deal. They had no more allies left, and they had to react. So the question will be, what starts to happen when this supposedly independent Palestinian force starts running Gaza? Is there going to be pushback there? If there is, how do you carry on fighting with Hamas? Do you start running the rest of the Strip, which looks like that is likely with this technocratic group, and then squeeze Hamas out? Diplomatically, will we start to see the engagement of other countries, Djibouti, Indonesia, Pakistan, into the Abraham Accords? All of these people that are we're going to sign the Abraham Accords. I don't think we're going to see the Saudis jumping on board just yet. That seems unlikely. But But I think that even though they might still be fighting, that will carry on in the strip at different points, and it will still be somewhat of a pain from a diplomatic perspective. I think that the next phase of the war, if this phase of the first 2 years we're winning the war, the next part is going to be, are they going to be able to win the peace? And there, the diplomacy is going to have to come in, and there's going to have to be some improvement in that sort of situation, especially because of the sort of declining public support for Israel in the Western world. What you're going to need to see with this sort of diplomacy is, as you start to get potential other peace deals coming on board, then you will be able to actually start to build back the legitimacy that Israel has suffered in the West. I've seen now that Donald Trump is coming down the stairs, and he's greeting the Netanyahus and the president of Israel, some security people. He seems to be in quite a good mood, waving to the crowds, fist pumping, whatever, giving people hugs. Trump is having a good time. He may not have got the Nobel, but he's certainly welcome on the tarmac in Ben-Gurion. I'd love to hear your viewpoints about what is going on this day. 0618951019. That is the line that you can get us on. We'll happily take your viewpoints. Now, the Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having regular wellness checks such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, better health starts here. And yeah, so we are continuing to cover this hostage release today, to talk about it, to talk about what comes next, as I watch Trump speak to Mike Huckabee, the ambassador of America to Israel, and it's a lot of smiles just right at the moment, people rather in enjoying themselves and seem to be having a good time. And it sort of takes us on to the next part of the discussion that we're going to have as a community. So once the hostages are gotten out, and again, I think that probably will happen, that will settle a major part of the discussions which we have kind of going forward. And one of the key discourses, because the question will now be more hopefully a tactical and strategic one about what to do with Gaza. And we've seen from the media in South Africa how difficult it's been for them to cover this hostage release. I think that the main key thing is people keep saying, well, why aren't people happy about this in the media or whatever? And it's because I think eventually to those groups it does represent, and what it is a loss for Hamas. Hamas are spinning it and they're doing the best to say that they're still standing or whatever, but I think what the media wanted to see was Israel losing here, and Israel hasn't lost. And so the next question is, when we talk about what I spoke about previously, which is winning the peace, what does that look like in the public information war? And the way I think to think about it is, there's an economic idea called menu prices. This is now me having to go back to my economics days, like 20 years ago, studying this at university. But basically, menu prices refers to the idea that when you have inflation, right? So the prices go up because there's too few money chasing too few goods, too much money chasing too few goods, that you have the price go up. But then, of course, inflation tends to disappear over time as new goods come onto the market, or the economy adjusts, whatever. And what people often say is that, you know, inflationary prices that go up during an inflationary time, it becomes sticky. It's difficult for these things to come down again. And the question is why? And the way that they explain it in economics is this economics of menu prices, right? Now, it's not actually menu prices that are driving up and down the price, but what the idea is that if the prices go up at a certain restaurant for your burgers and your salads, etc., and then you have to change the menu now because the prices have gone up, then when the prices come down again, it costs money to change the menu. Now, okay, this was back in the day when you sort of had to write menus by hand or print them at a print shop. You couldn't do them via AI. But the idea is that if menus are too expensive then to change, then you just keep the prices on because it's kind of too much of a schlep to change things. And in the broader economy, that's basically what they're saying, is that the broader economy adjusts to the high inflationary prices, and then it requires an act of impetus, if you like, to actually change what is going on in the economy. And I think that that analogy is the one that we're going to have to start thinking about when it comes to what happens next in terms of the in terms of this issue in the world, anti-Semitism in the diaspora, the continued fighting in Israel over this issue, is that there's been a menu price effect on anti-Semitism. Now, to be sure, a lot of stuff will fall away once the fighting either stops or becomes more of a minimum when it comes to the Gaza Strip, and there will be a fall away. Even if you look at in South Africa, even during the war, we saw a spike in anti-Semitism, but after the elections on the 8th of May, or was it the 8th of May? Well, in May 2024, even during the war, we've seen anti-Semitic incidents actually come down, although there's been a lot more activism and whatever. But basically in South Africa, this has fallen away as people kind of essentially lost interest. And that will happen as well in the rest of the world. People don't have strong attention spans. If you don't have interesting videos to post, TikTokers all the time, whatever, then it will actually start to fall away. And as it does so, that there will be less interest and people will get on with their lives or whatever. However, despite this, I think we're going to still have a menu effect. So for one example, right, a big example, the International Court of Justice, that is going to continue being a process that will be there, and depending on the outcome of that, could change the discussion and will continue to provide fodder for people who are interested in this particular topic. And of course, it goes from it changes the discussion, right? Whereas before, we had activists who were talking about a apartheid state or a settler colonial state. Now we suddenly have them talking about a genocidal state right around the court case. So that's one example about how you deal with the continued aftermath of these attacks. But also just like an infrastructural thing. So, you know, take the flotilla, which I like to refer to as the tortilla sometimes. You know, those groups on that thing are groups of extreme progressive groups, Islamist groups, nationalist groups, all sorts of people. And they don't actually they don't like one another. And we saw this during the tortilla because one of the Islamists on the group, on the tortilla, didn't like the fact that there was a gay rights activist, or an LGBTI activist rather, on one of the other ships. And there was a fight on their way to Israel about this. And so once you remove the war from this discussion, they immediately will go back to kind of climbing into one another. But because they've had 2 years to work on the networks, there have been an increase in the number of networks and the infrastructure that they've been able to build around this, because they could stay focused on one topic for quite some time. And those networks are going to stay for quite some time. They're going to stay in the media, they're going to stay in academia, they're going to stay in civil society, They're going to stay, and they will start to corrode over time, assuming things go in the right direction. But you're going to have to deal with those effects going forward for some time until people start to move out of positions. The democratic process can deal with it. Some of these things may take half a decade to play out the system. Take Zoran Mamdani, for example, the potential and likely mayor of New York in November. Right, he has run effectively off this Gaza thing, and he is likely to be there for the next 4 or 5 years, maybe 10 years, because of this. And this is something which we're now going to have to deal with. So that's what I think of where we're going to next. But getting peace agreements and more focus on those will be one of the ways that you start to dismantle the menu effect as we go along. And I'm going to be talking about that when we come up after the break. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, 061-895-1019 is the WhatsApp line that you can send to us, and we will see if there is anything that we can talk about. As we watch Donald Trump getting into the car and driving off the tarmac to I think he was going off to the base. By the way, Carol, thank you so much. Carol has sent a picture of Donald Trump draped in a Israeli flag riding on a donkey. It's quite an impressive piece of AI there, Carol. Thank you. And it's put there, Mashiach has finally arrived. I'm not quite sure that the prophets envisioned Donald Trump, but today we'll take it, Carol. Thank you for sending it. And please, if anyone else wants to send us, please do so. So there is what's going on. And what we were talking about before the break is what the menu prices might look like. What is the ratchet going to be? Ratchet, as in the mechanical thing, right, where you ratchet something up. So that could be misconstrued, so I apologize. But basically, yeah, so one of the first things that we're going to see is going to be the universities. And this brings me to something which is coming up, I think it's next week, maybe potentially the week after, where the first legal background and hearings are going to take place regarding the conduct of UCT. Of course, during the war, UCT had taken a stance where they decided to boycott Israel without proper processes, proper channels, without looking at what was actually going to happen if they did this. By their own estimation, UCT had documents that they had not released publicly, or in fact even to the council who was taking the decision. This was going to cost them R500 million, that's with a B, more than R500 million, and that is money in terms of it's money in terms of new infrastructure that was supposed to be built. It is money that's supposed to go towards bursaries for underprivileged students who are supposed to be able to get an education at UCT via these bursaries, and it puts them at risk to have the money go via there. It's money that is supposed to go towards research with health and all sorts of other things, and this all was being impacted by this this resolution that they took. And it's kind of astounding, because what's interesting is that UCT doesn't have any official ties with any Israeli universities or groups. Interestingly, they do have with the Chinese government, with the Iranian government, with the Russians, with Brazil, with a number of others. But for Israel, that's too much of an issue, apparently. So that was the issue. But this resolution went further than that, because what it actually said was that there was a if anyone was involved with the IDF, then you could be banned as well. And basically, this could be interpreted as wanting to IDF. If anyone had ever served in the IDF, which is basically everyone in Israel in some way, shape, or form, then you couldn't do work at UCT, because although UCT doesn't have any official working with Israel proper, they actually do a lot of work with Israeli professors, because particularly in the medical field, what happens is you have these mega projects where you have 20 or 30 or 100 people working on something around the world, and inevitably Israel is part of those. And so an enormous amount of research actually gets done in regards to this, and it is therefore an attempt to actually try and squeeze out Israeli academics, whoever they are, under whatever conditions, so that there is no engagement academically with any Israeli researchers, right? Now, this is what's ridiculous about this whole process, is that UCT knew this, and it wasn't even an Israel thing. It's just that when the donors make donations, they actually have to write these contracts about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it, et cetera, et cetera. And one of these things is that you can't interfere in academic freedom. And UCT could have, if they'd wanted to, just taken an enormous they could have said basically whatever they wanted, which is, they could have called Israel Nazis if they want, they could have supported Hamas if they want, they could have done all sorts of things, and the donors wouldn't have been able to do anything about it, because that's just freedom of speech. You can pretty much say whatever you want in South Africa. And that was what was happening. But because they imposed this boycott thing, because they were so desperate to exclude Israel from everything, that is eventually what actually occurred. And so because they tried to ban Israelis, then they ended up with this R500 million problem. And so the first mess that we're going to have to clean up is hopefully UCT, and this is going to come in the next couple of weeks. So expect to see lots of protesters and engagements and whatever as this goes before a judge. And as it goes before the judge, then we hopefully will see, since it wasn't passed properly, that this then gets dealt with and kicked out, and that UCT gets put back to where it was supposed to be. As we continue to watch what is going on live from Israel, I can see pictures of hostage families waiting to be supported. There's the Red Cross taking people out of Gaza. I can see Trump on his way to Jerusalem. The Knesset is handing out MAGA-style caps for Trump's speech, which is quite funny, and families are starting to speak to hostages ahead of their release. Pictures also showing ex-hostages Alon Ohel and Gali Berman in IDF hands. So that is what is going on, which is fantastic. Right. Well, I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. It's been 2 years since the atrocities of October 7th. This year, the South African Zionist Federation invites you to come together to honor the victims through the power of music. Please join us for this emotional communal event featuring a 20-piece orchestra, guest vocalist, special violin performance by released Hostage a Gumburger. The musical tribute will take place on Thursday, the 16th of October at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are free, but booking is essential. Gates do open at 5:30. For more information, go to www.sazf.org/ok7th. That's www.sazf.org/ok7th, and join us for an unforgettable evening, proudly brought to you by the South African Zionist Federation. And there is still time, so please go to and book. Thank you to Kim, who has sent us a picture from someone on Twitter, Amanda Markovitz, and it says today is day 738. 7 plus 3 plus 8 equals 18. I'm going to trust the math on that. And this number means Chai. Also, the station means Chai, life in Judaism, a number that embodies life, blessing, and hope. And may those coming home finally live again, be blessed again, and find hope again. Amen. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you for sending that, Kim. Now, in the last minute and a half, I just wanted to talk about something that I've been reading, which I think might be of interest to Chai FM listeners. It's a new book. It's by an Israeli researcher called Asher Lubotsky. And it's called, the book is called Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement's Perception of Zionism. And the reason this book is interesting is that since particularly the ICJ and this war, a lot of people have been wondering why the ANC in particular has gone off and done this. And there's all sorts of practical reasons, ideological reasons, but there's also historical reasons. And people who want to understand the South African Israel historical relationship often have a problem because, first of all, it's a history that's often done episodically. So people will know, for example, that Mandela was friendly with the Jews or that Israel worked with South Africa in the 80s, but no one's really sure how they connect with one another or what parts are important or why. It's also a problem that most of the people who have written this history tend to be partisans. You know, they were involved, whether it was Jews in the local community or people that immigrated to Israel or elsewhere, or if they were government officials, either in Israel or in South Africa, and they tend to write the history, and they've got their own political agendas and their own resentments and whatever. And then lastly, no one's ever really done any research into what the liberation movements, including the ANC and the PAC and others, actually thought. And this book actually does that, and it goes literally from the 1940s all the way to the 1970s and has some fascinating accounts. If you ever wondered why apartheid South Africa had an interest in an alliance with Egypt, or what the ANC thought about the Suez Canal crisis, or want to see a picture of Miriam Makeba visiting Jaffa with an anti-apartheid activist, Arthur Goldreich, or you are interested in what the South African Zionist Federation said about the Six-Day War in relation to Africa, all of this is in the book, and it's really, really interesting and fascinating, and gives a proper, comprehensive outsider's overview about what happened during that period. So it's on pre-order. I would highly recommend. I enjoyed it a great deal. And if you're trying to understand what happened in this country with regards to the ANC's viewpoint in Israel, you can't get any better. Shifting Solidarities, the South African Anti-Apartheid Movement's Perception of Zionism by Asher Lubotsky. You can look it up. Bringing us to the end of the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to whole team who puts things together. Craig pushes all the big red buttons. Vusi is on the sound as we watch more people helping to free hostages. Hopefully we free a lot more. Have a fantastic, very joyous Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeret. I'll speak to you next week.